President Trump has repeatedly claimed that a COVID-19 vaccine will be ready before the November election. The National Institutes of Health announced this week that four pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. have final stage clinical trials underway. We're examining the race toward a COVID vaccine here on The Morning Show. So are you participating in a vaccine trial? Why did you get involved? What's your experience been like so far? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Caroline Chen is a healthcare reporter at ProPublica. Caroline, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me back on your show.
Well, let's look first at where we stand with clinical trials. We heard from the NIH this week that there are at least four pharmaceutical companies at that end stage, at that phase three. Can you tell us where we're at?
Yeah, so you're right. There are now a number of companies that are in that large phase three trial, which is the final stage trial. And they're waiting for data that will show that, you know, whether or not that they've hit statistical significance in efficacy that shows that their vaccine works. And if they hit that bar, then they'll be able to go to the FDA and apply for, most likely, they have a couple of options, but most likely it'll be called emergency use authorization, which will allow them to bring the vaccine to market. And they'll have to show a number of things to the FDA, which, of course, besides showing that it works, the really important thing is to show that the vaccine is really safe, because, of course, this is going to be going into the arms of a lot of people who are healthy.
You know, earlier this month, AstraZeneca's COVID vaccine trial, it was halted, stopped. That was nearly 3 weeks ago. You know, someone in the UK had adverse serious reactions. That trial hasn't picked up yet. Do we know anything there? What's going on?
Yeah, so it is still halted in the US. It has continued. The halt ended in the UK. And that is because, you know, we have different regulators in different countries. So it is country dependent. So the FDA makes its own decision for the trial in the US versus in Europe, where it's decided by European regulators. So all we know at this point is that there was what they call an adverse event, which means a side effect that happened to a trial participant, which may or may not have been related to the vaccine. We don't know for sure right now. And basically, because it's the type of side effect that could, that one was serious, and two is one that could be linked to a vaccine, there's what's called a data safety monitoring board, which keeps an eye on these types of side effects when they turn up, and they decide whether it's serious enough that they want to put a pause on the trial. And then it gets investigated to say, hey, is this actually vaccine related or not? Because if it is vaccine related, obviously that's a concern. If it's not, then they'll say, you know, this isn't vaccine related. And this is something that's discussed with the FDA mm-hmm. before the trial can continue. Now, at this point, as I just said, we don't know whether or not it was vaccine related or not. But to me, it's actually a good sign because it means that these trials are being watched very carefully and they're proceeding the way that they should be, which is that there's somebody watching over them. And when there is a sign of something that could be of concern, that they're being paused so that they can be investigated.
You mentioned here about the emergency use authorization, and we heard this week that there may be new rules that would make it more difficult for this authorization to be granted to a vaccine ahead of the November election. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so I'm going to try not to get too wonky and too in the weeds here because okay. there is a lot that goes into emergency use authorizations or EUAs. But basically, during when there's sort of an emergency state declared, which is what we're in right now during a pandemic, there is this option for whatever it is, you know, whether it's a therapeutic, whether it's a diagnostic test or a vaccine, to be able to come to the market under an EUA instead of a regular full approval. And that's an important thing for the FDA to have as an option because it allows the FDA to release, you know, important therapeutics or vaccines or tests to the market faster than normal. So usually the standard for full approval is very high, which is really important that it's high, but it is a months long process. And so there's this tension, right, where, you know, it's a pandemic. We want things really quickly, but we also want things to be safe and effective and actually work. So all of the COVID tests that have come to the market so far, so the diagnostic tests, the antibody tests, have all been released to the market under an EUA. Plasma was also released under an EUA.
Convalescent plasma.
Plasma, was also came to market under EUA. So this mechanism has been used throughout the pandemic, but the now the question is, should the bar for a vaccine be even higher because it's going in the arms of healthy people?
Caroline Chen is a healthcare reporter at ProPublica. We're discussing how the U.S. and the world is racing to develop, manufacture, and distribute a COVID vaccine in record time. What do you think about fast-tracking vaccine development? 800-642-1234. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We are looking at late-stage trials and this worldwide race to develop and manufacture, distribute a COVID vaccine. Bloomberg is reporting this week that the Trump administration's Operation Warp Speed has a budget as big as $18 billion. Recall that this is the program that was designed to quickly fund pharmaceutical companies' efforts to bring COVID vaccines to market and to save lives. What do you think of these end-stage trials and the AstraZeneca trial stopped in the U.S.? Would you get a COVID vaccine if it became available today? Are you in a trial? Join in at 800-642-1234. We have Caroline Chen, who is a healthcare reporter at ProPublica, and Caroline stays with us. So, you know, Caroline, there has been a lot of pressure to produce a vaccine for COVID. And this week we talked with Dr. Stephen Hahn, the commissioner of the FDA, about what the drug's approval process would be and how effective a vaccine needs to be successful.
The way things work at the FDA is that our career scientists are the ones who analyze the data and make the decisions. We've been very clear about that. And throughout the pandemic, our career scientists have made the decisions regarding medical products.
Well, and then just hours after our conversation, we heard from President Trump who threatened to reject new and more stringent FDA guidelines. What do you make of the politics here?
Yeah, I'm concerned about the politics around the vaccine process. You know, I do think that the FDA, both Dr. Hahn and of course Dr. Peter Marks, who is going to be the decision maker here, has said, you know, Dr. Marks has even said, you know, he would resign if he felt that a vaccine that was not safe and effective got rubber stamped, because at the end of the day, the most important thing is that there's actually trust in this vaccine so that it is taken up and used by the population. Because if the vaccine isn't taken, then it's of no use against the pandemic, right? So there needs to be actual faith in the vaccine. And so that's why I'm so worried about all of this politicization and this back and forth, because, you know, ultimately, I think the FDA is concerned about having a high bar. But if there's, you know, the president saying that he's not going to sign off on this, and, you know, yesterday, Governor Cuomo was like, we're going to establish our own board to verify that the vaccine is a good one. It all adds to this impression that the vaccine may not be trustworthy. And I think that all sort of makes the public more confused
and the polling
makes them more anxious.
Yeah, the polling bears that out. Pew earlier this month said, you know, 51% of Americans would be willing to be vaccinated when it's available. And recent just, you know, polling this week out of CNBC says only 42% of likely voters said they will definitely or probably receive a vaccination when it becomes available. How problematic is that?
Yeah, it's extremely problematic because, for one, We don't necessarily expect that the first vaccines or any of the vaccines that are going to get authorized to come to market are going to be 100% effective at preventing infection. Now, it would be great if they're at least, say, 70% effective at preventing COVID disease. That would be very helpful against the pandemic. But as I've mentioned before, this is one tool among the many that we have in defeating the pandemic, along with wearing masks, social distancing. We have to think of the vaccine as one in our sort of toolkit. And so part of the goal we have would be of having as many people as possible take up the vaccine. And it is really going to be a thing where numbers matter. Having as many people get the vaccine is going to strengthen our response against this pandemic. So really, the vaccine only works if it is 1, safe, 2, effective, and 3, administered to as many people as possible. And that last part really depends on public trust.
Caroline Chen is a healthcare reporter for ProPublica, and she's breaking down the latest on COVID vaccine trials. Have you thought about participating in one of the vaccine trials? What are your concerns? Would you get the COVID-19 vaccine when it becomes available? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up again with Caroline Chen. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the path to a COVID-19 vaccine and the FDA's regulatory process. Earlier this week, we talked with FDA Commissioner Dr. Stephen Hahn on the morning show, and he stressed public health control measures to slow the spread.
We have to continue the common sense measures that we've outlined before, which includes mask wearing. When you can't socially distance, socially distancing for sure. Stay out of indoor crowded places and avoid crowds on the outside if you can. And of course, washing your hands regularly. Those are the common sense measures that will lead us forward.
Lead us forward. What do you want to know about the FDA vaccine approval process going forward? 800-642-1234. Conversation right here. Caroline Chen is a healthcare reporter at ProPublica, and she's our guide. Caroline, Dr. Hahn, ticked off the mask wearing and the social distancing and the hand washing. How will we know on these clinical trials that it is the COVID vaccine that's working, or whether it's these other things like mask wearing and public health guidelines that is making the difference?
Yeah, so actually the trials are set up to be pretty clear. So they have about 30,000 people in each of the phase 3 trials, and half get the vaccine and half get a placebo. And what they do is that they, you get whichever one you get, you have no idea which one you're getting. There's, as I mentioned earlier, there's a small group called the Data Safety Monitoring Board, and they are the only people who knows who gets what. And so they're able to track and make sure that they look out for any safety concerns. And other than that, everybody else running the trial, the companies have no idea who's gotten what. And then they have a pre-specified number of that they're looking for of people who get sick with actual COVID. And they wait until they hit that number. And then they look to see how many of those people were people who got the actual vaccine and how many of the people were those who got the placebo. And so then they can see whether or not the vaccine actually worked or not, because they actually had tracked who got the vaccine and who got the placebo. And what you can do is not only will you be able to see the difference in the arms. So like if, out of, I'm just making up some numbers here, out of 50 cases of COVID, 49 of them were in the placebo arm and only one of them was in the vaccine arm, the vaccine worked pretty well. But you can also look, because they take blood samples, you might say, hey, well, if I look at antibodies, doesn't everybody who has, you know, the vaccine have antibodies, you know, to the vaccine? You can see the difference between antibodies to the vaccine versus antibodies to actual coronavirus. So they also take blood samples so they can see the difference there. So you can actually see whether or not the vaccine is working that way. And that's how they track it in the trials. And not only are they seeing the difference between whether or not you got actually infected, but they're also trying to see whether or not the vaccine prevented severe COVID. So did it make a difference in people ending up in the hospital? So all of these things are being tracked and measured in these trials. And it's going to be really important to see how the vaccine did on these different measures.
Well, let's take a call now. Pat is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to make a comment more or less is that I think phase three is really, really important because this is when you find out whether there's any, what do you call them, contraindications? Because I didn't catch your whole broadcast because I just got up, you know, COVID
sure, sure.
And all. During the swine flu back in the early 70s, didn't they fast track the swine flu vaccine?
Pat, thank you for the call. What do we know about other vaccine developments like swine flu, Pat mentioned there? And, you know, what happens in this phase three, Caroline?
Yeah, so as Pat mentioned, the reason why it's really important to be doing a phase three trial with a large number of people, you know, 30,000 people, is that it is important to look for things, side effects, whether there are any safety issues in different age groups. So they are enrolling specifically people over the age of 60, you know, because the elderly are a particularly vulnerable population to COVID. They want to make sure that the vaccine works for them and there isn't a difference either in safety or efficacy for that particular group of people. That's really important. But the other thing I wanted to point out is 30,000 sounds like a big number of people, but it's really not that big compared to, you know, the population of the United States, mm-hmm. right? So beyond the trial, it's going to be really important that safety continues to be monitored. And so that's why both the FDA and the CDC have what they call post-marketing surveillance, which is continued ways of tracking safety. So there are ways for any member of the public to report any side effects that they feel, whether or not they're even sure, you know, I don't know whether this came from the vaccine or not, but I got the vaccine and I felt this thing. You can report that to the CDC, and the CDC tracks all these reports to make sure that there are no patterns that they're seeing. These are so important that these systems are set up because going from 30,000 people to hundreds of millions of people, could there be some very rare side effect that only turns up in hundreds of millions of people? Totally. That is definitely possible. And that's why it's really important to continue to do post-market safety surveillance. And we're going to need to have a really robust system going forward once the vaccine is approved. It doesn't end there.
Caroline Chen is with us from ProPublica, and you can join in with your questions about the vaccine development process at 800-642-1234. Caroline, why might the process for developing a vaccine for COVID-19, why might that differ from the influenza vaccine?
Yeah, so, well, the annual flu shot is pretty different because the flu is quite different. So every year, the flu mutates quite a lot year to year. And so the way that scientists develop the flu shot every year is they're basically trying to predict what each year's flu strains are going to look like. And so they're kind of doing an extremely well-informed, well-researched guess and producing the flu shot basically for the next year based on information gathered from the prior year and from, you know, the Southern Hemisphere. And so, but because of the nature of the flu, it's kind of impossible to know exactly what's going to come up ahead. And that's why the efficacy of the flu vaccine varies year to year. One thing that we've been relatively lucky so far, I mean, it's hard to say that anything has been good, you know, good news in this terrible pandemic, but it's that the coronavirus has not been rapidly shifting. And so,
when you mean shifting, you mean mutating?
Mutating, yes.
Okay.
And so, the vaccine developers feel at least that they have a pretty stable target that they are developing a vaccine towards. So that's the hope, that what if they make a vaccine, that it should work well because the coronavirus is not mutating in any drastic fashion like the flu is. So that's one big difference there.
You know, in here we, as we head into flu season and COVID-19, still a major, major outbreak in the Midwest and here in Wisconsin. In terms of your reporting, what concerns you about as you watch this collision of the flu and COVID?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And of course, we cannot predict what's going to happen in terms of how bad is this flu season going to be. And I've asked this question to a lot of both epidemiologists, public health experts, you know, is this going to be a double threat? Is it going to be really bad? And I've gotten some mixed answers. So the first thing that they've said is COVID mitigation measures. So sort of these common sense things that Commissioner Hahn mentioned, you know, washing your hands, social distancing, these are effective against both COVID and the flu, right? So if we are very good about doing these measures, we should have a lighter flu season as well, because they can help us prevent from transmitting both COVID and the flu. So we might be able to have a milder flu season just because we're being really good about washing our hands and distancing and wearing masks. So that's a potential optimistic view of this. The other thing is that we do actually have a way to prevent flu, which is the flu shot. So public health experts are particularly anxious this year that everybody gets the flu shot. Like, we actually have something we can do there. Let's do it. Because they want to save hospital beds for people who potentially end up having severe COVID, and they don't want those beds taken up by people who have severe flu when that could have been prevented. That said, it's hard to say if there's like a really bad flu season this year. I think one of the tricky things, and again, this comes back to testing. Mm-hmm. I feel like we always talk about testing. You know, it's going to be really important to be able to distinguish between flu and COVID. And so there's going to be a continued need for there to be high volumes of tests. And this is why it's important to have rapid testing available so that we know what it is that we're dealing with, you know, if there's sort of an outbreak in a school setting, for example, or in a workplace, you know, what is it?
Let's go to Katie now in Janesville. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Listening to the BBC this morning, there was a doctor on that was talking about the vaccinations and such, and he was saying they felt really good about the vaccination when they were testing the blood. But he was saying also that what they're finding out is that COVID will also hide in the nasal passages and that the vaccine really doesn't have anything to do with that. How do we watch for that? How do you test for that in this trial? How do you compensate for that?
Yeah, thanks for your question. So I didn't hear that BBC report, so I'm not sure exactly what it was that he was saying, but I'll take a guess here. So I was talking to Dr. Paul Offit, who is the director of the Vaccine Center at the Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania and a vaccine expert. And one of the things that he pointed out is that you can have a vaccine that is effective at preventing severe COVID. So it stops people from landing in the hospital, which would be great if you get COVID, or helps to reduce COVID disease, but doesn't necessarily prevent you from getting infected in the first place. So you might still be able to be a carrier. Ah. And again, as I mentioned earlier, these trials are going to be measuring all of these different metrics, which is helpful and important that they do. But it's going to be really important that we understand as a public what exactly the vaccine that's been released actually does for us, right? I mean, it'd be great to have a vaccine that, you know, if we get COVID, you know, the threat of being in the hospital is much reduced. But it might mean that you still need to keep wearing a mask, right? Because you could still get infected. It could still be carried in your nasal passages. I think that's what he was saying. Yeah. And so you could still be shedding virus, even though your chance of getting really sick is much reduced thanks to the vaccine.
Caroline, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Caroline Chen is a healthcare reporter for ProPublica. We have links, by the way, to her reporting at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.